Views and opinions expressed by callers, guests, and hosts do not necessarily reflect those of the Black Talk Radio Network and Black Talk Media Project. Black Talk Radio is new black media for the new millennium.
About a half hour into the program, we'll feature his talk to the general for a treat, and we'll be following up as we lead now to 50 years from 1968, and therefore celebrate the 50th year of the National Association of Black Social Workers. So this is the first step in that direction, and we'll talk, not in this program, later, more programs, the critical role that black social workers have played and must play, particularly in terms of reparations, and of course I'm talking about the rehabilitation aspects in addition to the compensation and restitution. But the rehabilitation part is the healing part that we all must partake in. So without further ado, you will now be listening to some of the pre-remarks leading up to the keynote speaker, as well as some of the people who were actually given awards. Enjoy. I'm Najima Weed, and we'll talk to you soon.
Here's a toilet. Grant us, O God, a lifelong affinity for truth and justice. We present our learning from these years to you. We offer to you a bouquet of what we have known and the ways we have grown. In tasks partly completed, challenges met, losses unexpected, unforeseen. In the awe-inspiring brilliance of creative energy. O Lord, our God of diaspora, we offer back to you our social work experiences, our life experiences, and seek blessings of what is yet to be. Here we have sought and found answers, so we began to live into new questions, questions of the utmost priority. We have created deep and abiding friendships as we care for those who find themselves living in the margins, so we might reach out to welcome the stranger and embrace the other. Oh God, we have learned systems of politics and of justice, so that we may never be shackled and troubled again. We offer back to you our beloved community and all who faithfully served her, that we may be all that you would have us to be and called us to become. We join the brigade of celebrated servant leaders. For all that has been, we offer thanks. And for all that will be, we say yes, O God. Yes. 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 Amen.
How's that, family? How's everybody feeling today? Y'all should say lovely, because y'all are up here and y'all are in one of the most prestigious places you'll ever be. And that is with all of these wonderful professionals. My name is Patrick Crawford, and I am the local chapter president for the Association of Black Social Workers DC Metro Chapter. And I would like to bring greetings and welcome you all. I hope that you have enjoyed this conference thus far. Our conference committee staff has put together and done extreme work to provide you with services. And if there's anything that we can do while you are here, please do not hesitate to call. But please call my cell phone. Don't call my room, because I will not answer. But we want you guys to come in, enjoy yourself. If you have not had a chance to explore DC, please get an opportunity after the workshop to do so. And I want to make sure that you guys are enjoying yourself and you guys recognize that it's been 25 years, so we appreciate bringing it back. We look forward to coming sooner than 25 from now, but we also look forward to what is to come. Thank you from the Association of Black Social Workers DC Metro Chapter, and welcome.
truly honored to have this opportunity to pay tribute to our founding president of this great organization. And before I give the tribute, I want to share a few words. But let me just say to those, and I know there's always some first timers, how many is here for the first time? Raise your hand. Wow.
Jomo Williams, that we continue to do nation building.
And he went on to talk about the divisive nation, because we sometimes got caught up in who belongs in the family and who don't belong in the family. And we got caught up with who has what and who doesn't have what. But there is still a need for us as Black social workers to be committed to the cause. Because Sidney Jomo Williams lived by, "I am because we are, and because we are, therefore I am." We are a collective, and we don't have a choice but to do what is necessary. And he also lived by the quote of Dr. King, "Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." And Sidney Jomo Williams worked endlessly, day and night, to end injustices. So I arrived in New York after I graduated in May of 1980 from Atlanta University. And I was told at that conference, when you get there, go to the New York, where's the New York City chapter? I was told, go to the New York City chapter office because they'll help you find a job. And I showed up there the summer of 1980. And I went to the office and I said, "I was told you have a job bank." I went to the NABSW conference at Howard down there. And they said, "Oh, good. Just go on back there in the room and somebody will show you the job bank book." And I walked in that back room, and there was Sidney and a host of the other brothers and sisters, and they were stuffing envelopes. And I said, "Well, I came to find out information about a job." And Sidney said, "Get one of those folders over there, fold it in three, and stuff it in the envelope and lick the stamp and put it on there. We got to stop them from closing Simon Hand Hospital. We got work to do." I never found out if there was a job bank folder or not. I was put to work, and then I was told that the New York City chapter was having their conference, and I needed to make sure that I got on a committee. And I had to get on a committee. That's where I met Selma. That's where I met Simra. I met Buckaroo. And that's when I was living in Yonkers. And I said, "Well, where's the Westchester chapter?" After going to the New York City's 1980 conference. And from there, I met Leonard and others. And we formed the Westchester chapter, and Sidney Jomo Williams was our first speaker. Sidney has had an impact everywhere that he walked, but let his words that I share with you today remind you of who we are, of who we belong to, and what our work has to be. There's no time for us to stop. There's no time for us to think that there's better days. There's no time for us to talk about who was there and who shouldn't be there. It's time for us to do the work of the people. Yes. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, my brothers and sisters. Let's live the life that Sidney Jomo Williams would be so proud of as he continues to look upon us today. Ashe. Ashe.
Volunteer, we donate, we do the work. It doesn't matter what the work is, but as long as it's committed to improving the quality of life for people of African ancestry, we're on it. We also recognize that we need to come here together as family every year to drink from the well, to be renewed, to be recognized and appreciated, to be valued, to commiserate those things that we know have happened to us in our communities. When we see things that happen to others, it happens to us because of collective work and responsibility, and because we take on the DNA and the feelings and the emotions and the sentiments of everything that happens to every person of African ancestry, regardless of what continent they live on. I feel wonderful because when we have had the opportunity to come here, we stand on the shoulders of so many. And I feel so good that we have begun to have the opportunity for everyone to understand, why is the luncheon named the Sini Jomo Williams Luncheon? What can we remember and recall about that man who was our first executive director? What is it that enabled us in this organization to be led by the presidents that you see here in our presence and those who are our ancestors? I am humbled to stand on your shoulders. And for each one of our living presidents, I regard them as my personal advisors. And I thank you, as well as the founders, for everything that you've done for me personally, because I know that you've walked this road, that you care about this organization, and that you care about me. So for everything that we do for each other, for everything that we mean to each other, for all the work that we have to do together for each other, I am eternally grateful to you.
Lunch is served.
to reach you and say thank you. Thank you. I have the first stop and thank the original teacher of my life, my mom, Jack McLean, who flew me to be with me today. She's the one, Mommy, this is for you. I remember you talking about going to Chicago's Teachers College, but not finishing, because you were just swept away by my fine day. And you started the family instead. Thank you. I have to say thank you to my Uncle Ekim. My Uncle Ekim has been my conscience, my black conscience. He's the warrior prince in my life. He's Black Panther that I adore. And I didn't know what that meant as a kid, but I always knew he was the strongest. He was the conscience. The black conscience was always telling me, that's not what black people do. Black people are kids. He was always teaching me that. From a young age, you're shaping my consciousness. Thank you to you and for flying in from Chicago just to be here with me. Thank you. Thank you. I adore you. And to his queen, Auntie Loretta. To my sister Gail, just bear with me, family. I know I'm supposed to be brief, but I have to thank my family. My big sister girl who was so smart and so beautiful. And I didn't want to live in her shadow. I just wanted to be like her. She taught me to fight. She taught me to fight, but we were always into it, not something. But she was a smart one. She was the honor roll one, and I remember telling my dad, why do I have to study so hard? Because I don't get it. And she just didn't even have to think about it. It came to her. He told me I was growing my muscle. I want to thank my beautiful cheerleaders, my daughters, Jasmine and Jessica. I love you dearly. And who is my favorite girl in all the wide world? Savannah. Thank you. Lastly, I just want to say, it has been real difficult, and I know one of the biggest things I sat here and I said, how do I say Asante Sana to the people in this room when I'm sitting here with three parts of my life, of my family, my birth family, my NABSW family, 30 years. You raised me from a graduate student at School of Social Service Administration to currently. These people are here on my dissertation. They are acknowledged in my dissertation. They are part of my dissertation. They are forever part of my life. And I care for words, and I honor other honorees. You all syllabus are in my syllabus. You all's works are in my works, and I thank you, and I carry your words with me also. And then also to my Morgan State University family, my I finally found my home, and I thank you all so much just for the time, and I don't apologize for taking the time. What I know, and it came to me this morning as I called his name, James Aubrey Plain, he did, your little girl. Me and my ancestors, we take up a lot of room, and we take up a lot of time, and I thank you for investing in me. Ashe.
So Dr. Sister Denise calls herself an emerging scholar, and if this is an emerging scholar, I can't wait to see what is to come. Thank you so much for the work you've done, and also for your strong shoulders that you use to hold other students who can walk in your path and shine in your light. That's our silver page. Our gold page is Dr. Annie McCullough Chavis.
Thank you for 30 years or more of being here. And I started coming to the conference in 1993. I've missed one. So that's how important this organization is to me. Because we are because I am. Thank you very much.
You have had the pleasure of seeing and hearing the names of some heavy hitters in social work education. When you Google Black social work pioneers, you'll see Dr. Iris Carlton today. When you Google genealogy, Black genealogy, you will see Dr. Chavis. The heavy hitters are in the building. You want to take some time to sit at the feet of the heavy hitters. Now, around here, the heavy hitters have to play first, second, and third base. So I'm going to ask our Silver Award recipient to come forward and to introduce our speaker.
Hotel family.
Hotel.
The African Center Academy. It'll change your life. Get you some back at NKBSW. Yes, African Center Academy. Absolutely. I get the honor to introduce my friend. This is what I signed on for. This is what I thought I was going to be doing. I was so busy doing that and working on something else that I had no idea that even I was going to be honored today. So that was so funny when the email first came. But I'm here to talk about my friend. So let me tell you about how we became friends as I get ready to introduce this bad brother from the South Side of Chicago and our Atlanta connection. I was out in the community doing some work, right, putting in work, and someone came to our attention. One of my members of NABSW came to our attention, and she needed some assistance. She was in Atlanta. We were in Atlanta together, and there was a concern regarding some police brutality. Senator Vincent Ford, if y'all don't know him, you need to find out him. He's a true king and a true warrior in the community. Yes, and he's running for mayor of Atlanta. I said, I need some help for my sister. And we need to find someone who can address this police brutality case. This woman had been pushed down, stopped over by Atlantic Station, stopped by the police. They were trying to get at a young black boy who was in her custody that day. They were out, not custody, but they were all in the car together. They stopped the car. They were trying to get at him, so they're saying he didn't have on his seatbelt. When she went to ask questions, she was roughed up, thrown to the ground, basically stepped on, bruised up, all across her face, taken throughout the night. They never would really book her. They just kept moving her from place to place to place to place. She calls me and says, well, okay, I don't know what to do. But then they tell me, go over there and see my, always tell me to do. He said, go over there and see my friends at Davis and Bowles. Okay. Go over there and see Wally Davis. I had never met this man. He said, come in and have a seat. His name is on the big marquee. His name is on the this, that, and the other. He says, come in and have a seat. Tell me what happened. Bring your friend. And we sat for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. And we talked.
case went from us having to talk about it to, in the meantime, there was another young man who got shot in the back. We had to go out to Union City to address that case. In between, he says, bring your friend with me. We held press conferences and we did everything, trying to make sure this woman is right. My, her, our friend, social worker, was protected. We are over here dealing with all of this in between time, and she is concerned because she not only needs medical attention, she doesn't have any money to pay for an attorney. So this man I have come to see, whose name is up on the marquee, whose name is on the door, who's on the law firm, whose name is on the stationery, is still saying, come back and see me and let's sit down and get the particulars of this case. No one has asked us for a dime, a penny, a nickel. He just keeps saying, what do we need to do? He says, meet me and let's get ready to take this to court. We got to get these charges dropped off of her. By the way, I didn't mention that she's 69 years old at the time of this incident. Okay. So he's just like, meet me down at the courthouse and let's go and address this issue. We got to get these charges dropped off of her. You know, because they, even though they didn't charge her that evening, they subsequently tried to go back and charge her because she addressed the thing about AAK. So, having said all of that, this man is now he and I end up becoming friends. We end up talking about these different things. I'm telling you about someone who I was like, he has to come and speak to this group. He has to come and still be doing. He's putting in work over there, I'm putting in work over here, and I subsequently started learning that he knows all the different characters. I know we run in the same circles. Then we find out we from the south side of Chicago. Hey, you know, then we find out we from Atlanta, and the whole entire time, having said all of that, we realize that this is what our journey is supposed to look like. I wanted to make sure that we had a warrior king who could talk about some of the issues and help us find our way. Yeah. Let me introduce to you, for the first time, Attorney Mualla Davis.
Remember this, against all that destruction, some yet remained among us, unforgetful of origins, dreaming secret dreams, seeing secret visions, hearing secret voices of our purpose. As Dr. Dozier said, it's good to be home. It really, really feels good to be home. It feels so good to be with family. Welcoming, loving, encouraging, African, Black, New African, melanated, mocking. It's good if you were mocking. And it's, even if it's just for a moment, just for this moment, where we don't have to openly fight in this space, all that destruction. In a space that we can dream our dreams and not be bombarded with the negativity of the nightmare of being a Negro in America. A space that the secret voices we hear are more than wisdom. Those secret voices which are not muffled by the madness of white supremacy rhetoric repeated over and over again in sometimes subtle but sometimes severe ways. This space, because there are other spaces, y'all. Spaces where we may work. Spaces where we may teach. Spaces where we may have to operate. And in those spaces, sometimes the only way that we can be safe is to be but a fraction of ourselves. We can't be our whole selves in certain spaces. We can't be our complete African selves in certain spaces. Because we, as Barnard Delaney said, we remain a nation within a nation. And so some of us are behind enemy lines. But when we come into this space, this is liberating space. It's important. I know outside when you came in, and I know my brother Cliff Morgan is here from Chicago, and I know when I sent him a text, I said, come to the Woodrow Wilson room. This isn't in the Woodrow Wilson room anymore. When we walk out, it may reappear, but right now it's not up there. Y'all understand? That's what Woodrow Wilson was talking about, the birth of the nation being like history written with life. That's how he described the birth of the nation when he showed me. So Woodrow Wilson was a stone cold racist, white supremacist. So we know that this space is not this space. This space is the space of our ancestor who was honored here today. This is our liberated space. Mm. So we can dream these dreams of being whole again, of being sovereign, of being self-determining, of being self-governing. We can dream those dreams in this space. We can project those visions in this space. We can do that. And that, you all, was my introduction, so I better say hotel. I'm just getting started. Free to land.
Free to land.
Power to the people.
Power to the people.
It is really, truly an honor to be here in Vatican City, in the DMV, to be here for your 49 years of struggle. Something to be said about that. So it's a true honor for me to be here. And then to be invited by my sister. This is a scholar activist. In the best tradition, right? Sometimes we think scholar and activist are two separate things, but we don't have time for that. The song goes, we gotta be able to do it at the same damn time. We have to be a scholar and an activist at the same time. We don't have time for you to just be off in academia somewhere while our people are suffering. And at the same time, you don't have time for you to be running the street without studying. Y'all understand, young people, students, right? That's why it's important that you're here in this space. So that these founders, young people, if you don't come talk to one of these founders, shame on you. You gotta ask them, what made you do this? What prompted you? What kept you going? What brings you here after all of these years? Because I want some of that. Some of that long distance running. Because we are long distance people. The baton has been passed from hand to hand. Henry Allen Garnett, Martin R. Delaney. Y'all understand? Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. That's the tradition that we're talking about. We're not talking about other traditions. We need our cultural privacy. There are spaces, y'all. There are spaces. I know there are spaces that we have to go into, and they are integrated, assimilated, and all kind of other stuff. But there are times that family have to be able to get together with family and all. come in the side door, creep in the back door to see what's really going on behind the scenes. I've got to bring you all greetings from my law partners in our law firm, the Davis Bozeman Law Firm in Atlanta, who have co-labored with me for over a decade, fighting for our people. When I say fighting for our people get mistreated in so many different ways. And so, while we're in this liberated space, they're still standing what we call on the wall, watching and guarding and being prepared to defend the basic humanity of black folk in Georgia, that state, in what I know everybody thinks is the black Mecca, but it is a dangerous place for black folk, particularly when you have brainwashed Negroes running the plantation. And so I know it looks good on the outside, but I have to tell you that when I arrived in Atlanta to start law school while I was still in the Navy, and I'll tell y'all about that, but when I arrived in Atlanta, there were a couple of brothers who were just fighting the power. One of them is in this room, and I want to make sure that you all know that Baba Alvin Dowler, y'all look big. Put your hand up in your pocket and you can pursue. Baba Alvin Dollar, Baba MZ Tate, those were brothers that when we came to Atlanta, they were on the front line fighting, and they continue to fight. And so there's this marriage between social workers and the people. We're inextricably connected. We y'all can't run from us. I need you. After this, if y'all don't treat me right, I'm gonna need some counseling. For real. I'm gonna have some help me now, all right? Because that is, we are a people that have been injured. And we continue to be injured by this system, white supremacy. And those are some of the things that we have to deal with. I want to tell you before I move on to making a little bit more of a connection as to why y'all are my people and my family, to tell you that I wish I could stay here into tomorrow and on until the conference finishes, because this morning I had a chance to go into several of the workshops. I got a chance to go into the multi-generational workshop. I mean, what a dialogue. These are kind of intergenerational conversations that we have to have. Then I got a chance to go into the African Jedna Collective, talking about building a manhood groups. These are powerful. First of all, do y'all know that what y'all are doing here is special? See, I have to tell my son sometimes, right? You know, he just starts to take it for granted. I'm like, boy, you are in a special house. In a very special house. Your mama is a revolutionary. Your daddy is a revolutionary. And we love you. And he doesn't always see it. So I just want you all to understand that I've spoken in other black professional organizations. And they are not as African as this. And y'all should be clapping your hands and stomping your feet for being a black, unapologetically black. Can be our African selves. when we're at our best. We're not imitating anyone. And that's what, students, you have to understand. That's what you bring to this work that's unique. That's why we don't need you to be a copycat, trying to copy somebody else's theoretical principles about black folk. How can they tell us how to be the best of us that we can be? It has to come out of our Africanness. It has to come out of our origins. It has to come from who we are. Too, because I know it's supposed to end at 3 o'clock. I know y'all looking at y'all watches, got to go to the museum and what have you. And y'all make sure y'all go down there and shop at the marketplace too, okay? They have some awesome stuff. I already got mine, so I'm cool. Jimmy King, a couple books. But when I said, you all are my people, it's like, you ever been to a family reunion and you go up and talking to a cousin, and they nodding their head, and looking at you, and nodding their head, and looking at you, and then they say, who would you say those people were? And you had a whole conversation. And so then you have to tell them who your people are. So I gotta tell you who my people are, so that you can understand that y'all are my people, that we are family, right? So my mama, one of seven, grew up in the projects on the south side of Chicago, graduated at 16. She was brilliant. Went to college, Chicago's Teachers College. But her public aid worker said that once she turned 18, you can't go to school full time. You gotta help support your family. So it took her 10 years to get a 4-year degree. And I know that this poor, skinny little black girl with them thick little glasses that was so smart, if she were born in a different era, would have had a different set of opportunities. But she held no bitterness. She swallowed that and spoon-fed it to me and came and picked me up and took me through the streets of Chicago Cliff to keep me from getting got by them streets. I'm not going to give my baby to them streets. Right? So when I graduated as the first black valedictorian of the predominantly white school that I attended. And then I got my commission to the Naval Academy. And then I graduated from the Naval Academy. And then when I went to law school that night, while I worked and took care of my family, then I got my law degree, and then my first job was at one of them big law firms. And it was at the Bank of America building, the tallest building in Atlanta. I was on the 54th floor. You could look out from my window and you could see Stone Mountain on the clear day. And my mother came up there and she looked out over and tears started running down her eyes. And she was like, my baby made it. Y'all got mamas and grandmamas and aunties and big mamas like my mama, right? Y'all see we people? Some of y'all are absolutely the prayer. The prayer. You are what they could be. You're in spaces they could never go. And then when they see you, when you walk in the room, you bring them with you. When you come back with something and they see something, they are already there. So you know my people. And you know the power of my people. But then you know, our story is complex now as African people in this yet-to-be United States. Complex. So you know my brother, Cliff. You know my brother. My brother, brilliant, smart, scored 99 percentile on the entrance exam to his high school, just absolutely intelligent. the streets kept calling. And his self-esteem, his hair was too kinky, his nose was too broad, his features were too African, and the people that were around were too critical of him being a smart African boy in that time and space. Black was no longer beautiful. And it broke his spirit. And so, he self-medicated. Marijuana, alcohol, crack. So 2 years ago, he died in a house in Jeffrey Manor that my mother bought just for him so that he would not die like my cousin, frozen to death in Chicago with you. So you know my people. You counseled my people. You loved on my people. And they loved you back. So when I say it's good to be with family, it's good to be with my people, it's from that space of us having these shared experiences. Everybody in here got one that the streets got them, that didn't get to see this. As sister said, I wish y'all could stand up here and see this. It give you hope. Just seeing this. Because this was not supposed to happen. If it were left up to them, we wouldn't be speaking to each other. We wouldn't be on the planet Earth if it were left to them. Look at all the efforts. And I could walk through them, but I don't have time. All the efforts to attempt to destroy not only our minds, our spirits, but our actual bodies and beings. That's what mass incarceration is about. That's what police brutality is about. It's about the dehumanization of African people over and over again. This is uninterrupted warfare on us. Uninterrupted. Be clear about that. Police brutality didn't just start, it just started getting recorded. That's it. I just didn't have the tape to show to say, look, we're suing y'all behind and you're not getting out of it. It has been our word against theirs. And still the tape done the whole way. I mean, it's like they're lying eyes. Now he moved. When you hit him the third time, that made him move. So let's talk about our responsibility as black professionals in this moment in our people's history. Can we do that just for a minute? Because we're talking about unmasking, right? Politics and policies. And so what is our responsibility as black professionals? And then I'm going to get out the way. First, I would humbly submit that our kazi, our work, is with our young people. So now you go, hold on to your chair now, because I'm getting ready to come down somebody's lane, and you may not like it, but here I come anyway, because I need to go home. My ticket is paid for, y'all can keep me here, okay? I've heard people say that our young people are our best hope. I've heard them say that. But truthfully, our young people are our only hope. We have to unequivocally, without question, embrace our young people as our only hope. That if we fail them, it's over for us. It is life or death. Y'all understand?
Yeah.
I told you about my brother. My mother never gave up on him. That's her child. She never stopped praying for him, never stopped hoping, never stopped believing, never stopped trying to provide for him. And that's how we have to be with our children. And you'll hear people, they'll say, I don't know what's going to happen with our young people. What you mean you don't know what's going to happen to our young people? whatever's going to happen to them is going to be about because of what we do.
Yeah.
We hear people talk about their lost generation. If they lost, then we lost them. We don't blame the child.
Exactly.
It's our responsibility to go find them.
Right.
So this is our absolute, we just can't run from this, right? See, Tupac said it a different way. I'm reaching some of y'all hit my heads. Y'all don't even go ahead. I know I got New York in the house, right? I know we got some West Coast. You know, y'all throwing it up over there. Y'all watch them now. But Pac, in what I call his African womanist anthem, which was "Keep Your Head Up." That was an African womanist anthem. He says, "Say there ain't no hope for the youth, and the truth is it ain't no hope for the future." So if you say there ain't no hope for the youth, then you really say there ain't no hope for the future. So Pac said it that way. You can look at Baba Asa Hill, how he said it. Baba Jay Carruthers, how he said it. Chauncey McIntyre, how she said it.
Come on now. Come on.
It's been said a lot of different ways, but we cannot, for 1 minute, give up on our young people. Because here's part of the issue. I got to move. Part of the issue is that we don't recognize what our young people have already done. We don't recognize what they've done, because if we did, we'd be able to see the potential of what they could possibly do. Example, quick. February 1, 1960. Four teenage black boys changed the trajectory of history. Four teenage black boys. Remember, the narrative is about what black boys do and not do. Four black boys changed the way the movement moved. It led to the starting of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. Come on now. That all over the South, all of these historically black colleges and universities, all over the South, young people started sitting in. This is all before white folk got involved. These were black young people, college educated, that said enough is enough. We'll stand against white supremacy. We'll sit. We'll do whatever. Our young people did that. Our young people did that. Don't rob them of their victories. There it is. A&T, Greensboro, Woolworths, February 1, 1960. Go to the statue and pay homage. On our way up here for the first inauguration, I had to take my children through North Carolina, and I had to stop. I said, if not for these four, we wouldn't be going to D.C. Put it in context, y'all. Barack Obama and all of the other folk that appear, they drop out of the sky. It's because of great sacrifice. I'm going to take you back a little bit further, really quick. Y'all understand that as they were removing us from Africa, as they were capturing us, stealing us away from our mamas and our daddies, that the majority of the folk they were stealing away were between the ages of 10 and 25. But here's they don't leave them as victims. 150 revolts on board ships. Before they got to the land, they was fighting and struggling and overcoming and revolting against white supremacy on the boat. Remember Little George, when they snatch up the ship, turn it around, sail it back to Africa in 9 days. Don't snatch these young people's victory. Those were young people who did that. Ferguson. Folks say all the time, they say, look, what came out first? Just a bunch of protests. You better look closer. Your enemy will never tell you of your victories.
Yeah.
Never,
yeah.
Never,
yeah.
Never.
Yeah.
Never. There'll continue to be people who never even set foot in Ferguson. We took a group of lawyers because of the National Conference of Black Lawyers asked us, bring some lawyers. So we took lawyers from Atlanta to Ferguson, and what I saw were young people. Baba, I saw young people. I saw sisters in leggings and bamboo earrings and brothers with tattoos on their face, and they just would not go indoors. They refused to stop struggling and fighting, and because of that, other young people from colleges started coming in. And so young people changed that dynamic. There was a judge there, had been there for a decade, and did all kind of craziness to our people, had to resign as a result of those young people. There was a 20-year-old who was put on the Ferguson Commission as a result of those young people struggling in the street. There have been 40 different law changes in the state of Missouri as a result of those young people. Look at the Ferguson Report. Look at the Ferguson Report. The Ferguson Report is produced because of those young people. If we just acknowledge what young people are already doing, then we would know, oh man, I see what y'all can do. Let me back you even more. My son took a picture. We brought him the camera, very expensive camera. I told my wife, dude, does it have to be this expensive? First camera, he took a picture. Seemed like a simple picture, Doc. But it was a good looking picture. So you know I went and said, take some more. Keep taking. Take video. When we see the potential in our young people, we're not brainwashed by the media about what they can be. We will invest more in them. We got to see it. We got to tell that story. I'm going to tell you about Atlanta. I'm going to move on. We're going to get out of here. Atlanta. In Atlanta, the young people, two high school students, started on Twitter and on Snapchat this March in July. They started it. Not me, not the NAACP, not the SCLC, none of the major churches. These two little teenage sisters started it. 15,000 people came out. When those 15,000 people came out, they started thinking about, well, let's do this again tomorrow. So some more folk came out. It wasn't 15,000, but it was enough. Then the next day. So 5 days in a row, young people are marching throughout Atlanta. The mayor gets on TV. I ain't gonna talk about it too bad. He's of our complexion. I just struggle, because we can do. That's why, I gotta take a little side. That's why it's important to keep your feet in here. Because you'll mess around and lose your consciousness. Yeah. Right? You graduated from Howard University, so you gotta kind of keep you gotta stay here. I don't care how high you get. You can be a college president, but you still keep coming back here because these are the roots. So this is your anchor. So you can't get moved too far. Because the world, man, folks will start telling you how great you are, start awarding you with honorary degrees and giving you monies and chairs and all kinds of funds, and you'll mess around and forget to be here. We won't see you out in San Diego next year. I'm done with that black stuff, man. I graduated. But as the African Gender Collective told me this morning, as I learned from them, is that you don't never graduate. You keep evolving and growing. That is the African way. You just keep being. Brother said he's 73 years old and he's still growing. That's just all life. This lifelong learning. So, they were in the street. The mayor comes on TV and says, man, this has got to stop because we're going to run out of money paying the police overtime. This has got to stop. And so it's going and going and going. And then it really got tricky because they went from downtown to Buckhead. If you know anything about Atlanta, they went to Buckhead. Downtown is still in transition, but Buckhead is Buckhead. You understand? And so when they go up to Buckhead, not only do they go up there, they go to the governor's mansion. These fools are marching to the governor's mansion. You got to love our young people. They just marching. I'm watching it on TV because I told them I will represent y'all because that's what we do. Phone call.
Cabral now.
We got to tell the truth. We got to tell the truth about our struggle.
Amical Cabral.
It's not all roses. When we talk about, you know, Africa and African history, we have to put it in context. We're not doing it just, you know, to puff our chest. We're doing it as so that it helps inform us as Sankofa to look back. Look back. How did we get into the situation, as Baba J. Carruthers said, the mess that we find ourselves in? How did we get here? Right? So we got to look at that critically and not just ceremonially. And so they made a critical mistake, and the mistake was this. The city was not completely on their knees. They have to surrender before you decide to meet. And then you tell them where the meeting will be. He invited them down to City Hall. Come meet with me at City Hall 4 days later. So all the steam was taken out of it. And you'll remember that was when Andrew Young, Ambassador Andrew Young, called them unlovable little brats. And Kasim Reed said that Martin Luther King would never, never take over no highways. Then what was the Selma? What were they marching on? Lord have mercy. I said, you got an undergraduate and a JD, and you don't remember what happened and stuff? We reenact it every year. We're not walking in the grass or swimming in the river. It's in the highway. John Lewis, you know, y'all see it? Lord have mercy. So, the only point that I'm making is that these young people had pushed them to the brink, and we were near victory. They were near victory. It was a tactical mistake. There were collaborators, because they always have collaborators. They always have been. So don't judge our race on our collaborators. You judge other races on theirs. Every race has collaborators. Every race has traitors. That's how it works. Folks that want to get personally benefited at the expense of the masses. That's how it goes. But it's cool. Second thing that we have to do, and I'm going to wrap this up, is that we have to, now that we know and we're clear about the potential of our young people, we have to engage in authentic relationships. That's what I was hearing in that multi-generational workshop I was in. I heard this conversation about authentic relationships. Don't just pick me out because I know how to use Twitter. Right? Just come on and do my social media for me. No, be in an authentic relationship with me. A real relationship. Don't just come, you know, to be, you know, talk to me because you think you can help. I can help you with some scholarship money to stay in school. Be in an authentic relationship both ways. And so when we're in an authentic relationship, here's what it looks like. We have to offer ourselves to our young people. Us. We have to offer ourselves to them. Food, home, your skills. The way we do it is that if a young person says, we're going to protest, we say, we will represent you for free or find another lawyer that will. We will make sure that you're represented. What's happening with our young people as they organize, they're being traumatized. And so there's space for social workers and counselors to come and help offer up the service. Just go to the meeting. Don't direct nothing. Let them do what they don't do and just say, I'm just here. If somebody feels like they need to talk, I'm here. That I'm trained to do this. So offer ourselves up. Last thing, and I'm out the way, is that once we're in authentic relationship, then we can do what all of us want to do with our young people. And that's what? All of us want to teach our young people. It's something in us that we want to keep passing it on. And so once you're in an authentic relationship, then our young people will give you permission to even correct them. Because they trust you. You're in this relationship for the right reasons. And then the question is, what are you teaching? Three things, really quick. First, you teach them about who we are. We got to start there. It's called a Wahine Mesu. Right? It's a healing. In Kemetic culture, the Wahine Mesu is for us to rebirth. Right? And I believe that we are in a rebirth period. That I went through one when I came into the African Center Education Movement in 1988, 89, 90. That was a rebirth. And I believe that the Black Lives Matter movement and the raising of the consciousness and the lifting up of Asada Shakur and the lifting up of our nationalist traditions is a Wahimi Mesu, it's a rebirth. And so we gotta be at the tip of the spear with the educational material, and that's why the African Center Academy is so critical. That's why the African Gender Collective is so critical. That's why this organization is so critical, because we have to provide the information to educate them about who they are. Second piece of what we have to teach them is we have to teach them about white supremacy. We have to, don't run away from it. Neely Fuller said that if you don't understand white supremacy, everything else you think you know will only confuse you. I'll remind that later because I'm running out of time, but you gotta get that. So we have to break that piece down. And then the last thing is that we have always had a movement. We have always had a movement. We still have a movement. They are stepping into a movement. That's what this is, a movement. It retreats, it contracts, but it's still a movement. Forever, we have struggled despite the odds. As I close, I tell you a story so that we can understand our resistance and our resilience as a people. We never stopped fighting. I remember I was a decent basketball player, not as good as my father, but I was a decent, my father played at Tennessee State and then he played with the Harlem Globetrotters. So I wanted to be that good, but I wasn't. But I played basketball and we were on a winning streak and we were just winning. And then we were in a game and it was very, very late in the game and we were losing. And it really looked like we were gonna lose. I mean, it was late in the game. A couple of minutes left, we were down probably 8 points. And the student body began to chant something that I'll never forget. And I think, when I think of African people, when I think of what we are about, I think of that chant. And they began to chant, "We refuse to lose." It's a powerful statement because what it acknowledges is that we're behind right now. And I think if you look at any indicator as it relates to black wealth, black incarceration, everything, we're behind right now. But we refuse to lose. Let me tell you how it went. It was a little clap. So I'm about to test your Africanness, and then I'm going to get out the way. But it was a little clap, and it went like this. It would say, you know, it was like one of those little house claps. I know y'all love go-go, but it was a little house clap. It was like, "We refuse to lose. We refuse to lose. We refuse to lose. We refuse to lose." Thank y'all. Power to the people.
One thing, I didn't know if you were going to mention, but when I in Atlanta. I don't know how many of you have seen that the Highway 85 has a big hole in it because there was a fire a couple of weeks ago. And they identified a black homeless man who happened to have a white male friend and a female, seemed like Asian friend, who were also, she's white too? Okay. They were also under the bridge. But for some reason, they took him in as the culprit for the fire to say that he lit the fire and he was smoking crack. And they've been testifying against him on the news. So some of us were talking about, isn't it interesting that the material that caught fire had been put there by a corporation 5 years ago. So it's a fire hazard. But the corporation, nobody's talking about any culpability on their part. And so we were just commiserating about how when a black person is found, he is demonized and he's used, he's strung up and hung to show that we found the culprit and we're going to put him away for life. So the next day, and we're talking about this the first day we came here, the next day the sister sends me a link to say, here's a link about the conversation we had last night. And I open it up and I read it. The title says that the homeless man now is being represented by a high-powered a law firm. So I keep reading it, and I'm like, what white people came up to save this black man? And as I go down, I see Bozeman and Davis.
African men and boys, and we heard our speaker reference them. So get your knowledge. Again, I will remind you to complete your evaluations. We are paperless this year. If you have any problems, please go downstairs. There are laptops available to you in the exhibit area or in the marketplace. And while we're talking about the marketplace, please make sure that we participate in cooperative economics and give, well, you're going to get some too. So let's turn this money over in our community for a change. Absolutely. Just want to remind you that this evening also, OSA is having a black royalty party, and the admission is $5. No? We're at the National Pastime Sports Bar and Grill. Excuse me, young people, are we there tonight? At Pastime, see? See, I know it said white party in the brochure, but if you look at the journal, it says black royalty party. Okay, so also want to remind all the persons who are participating in Harambe that we have rehearsal tomorrow at 12 o'clock in the Woodrow Wilson Ballroom A, all of the executive committee. We need to have you present so that that can run, that particular closing ceremony can run smoothly. The VIP holding room for Harambe tomorrow is Baltimore 4, and we are asking that everyone is present who has to be.
And I look forward to seeing you, and thank you for your donation, and I look forward to seeing you at Harambe, and definitely, definitely I'll be seeing you in San Diego. Thank you.
What if you can just stand with your heart or your posture? Some of you will be the benediction before you gather again. Some of you will transition from this place to the place of reward. This is also a sacred space. Whatever generation you're from, go knowing that you all are one. Every child, every woman, every man, every elder. We give honor to the founders. Only you and God knows what inspired your hearts to develop the courage. But sometimes the simplest trying on a hat in the store was impossible. And yet you persisted. As a sacred place, there is a sacred one who will guide you. Whether you call that one Elohim, Adonai, Yahweh, Allah, God, I pray you would take a piece, P-I-E-C-E, of that God who will give you the peace, P-E-A-C-E, of the Prince of Peace. Go and realize there's much work to be done. And you are the eyes and hands and feet and minds of God. Never let your schooling interfere with your education.